And welcome back in GameDaySportsRadio.com. Monday morning blitz, Boji Wood, joined by Mike Bernard from OTM Sports in Las Vegas. We're covering or recapping some college games from this past weekend. Georgia, Tennessee. Georgia 38, Tennessee 12. Mike, I think Tennessee played the very best game that they could play, but this game wasn't even close.
No, it wasn't. And that we saw why Georgia was favored by 31 points. But, Coach, on Inside the Numbers, I said if I had to play the game, it wasn't a big play. I said I would hold my nose and play the Volunteers. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I think Jeremy Pruitt played not to lose bad, which is – I'm not saying that it's a bad thing because you're trying to build confidence and you're wanting to build a program. And, frankly, you're just – he was outgunned almost at every position, but they did keep it under that 30 to 31-point point spread.
Georgia is just playing sloppily right now. Going back to Missouri and then Saturday against Tennessee, didn't cost them there, but, again, it may cost them down the road. I think Kentucky can give them a run for their money. If Georgia doesn't play well against Kentucky, Kentucky's got a chance to win that game. If Georgia doesn't play well against Florida, if Florida keeps improving, Florida's got a chance to win that game. So, again, I can't imagine that Kirby Smart's letting this happen, that, you know, Georgia's thinking, well, we'll just throw that G out on the field and everybody's going to shake their boots and we're going to win. I can't believe that, you know, he's letting that happen. But I tell you, from the outside looking in, it certainly seems that way.
Well, I think one thing that's obviously they're super talented, but I think the key for them still being undefeated – is they haven't lost the turnover margin in any game to this point. They're a net plus six through five games in turnovers. Their defense is still dominating for most of the game, and they score 40 a game. So that combination of those two things, they're outclassing teams right now, but you're right. You've got Kentucky coming up. You've got, they have to play Auburn down the road, give time for Auburn to kind of get their offense going, so they do need to shore up some mistakes for sure.
Jake Fromm, 16 of 22 on Saturday, 185 yards, didn't have any touchdowns, didn't have any interceptions either. He's been solid since he stepped in at quarterback for the Bulldogs last year. But what I like about Kirby Smart's plan this year is he's got a lot of people playing and getting meaningful playing time. Justin Fields, the hotshot freshman quarterback, he was only one of two passing, but he rushed five times for 45 yards. He is such a run threat on the zone read, much more than Jake Fromm. And, again, not necessarily what he did with his feet, which was average 9 yards a carry, which is pretty dang good, but because the defenses have to respect him running the ball so much more on the zone read than they do Jake Fromm, they can't dedicate another guy to the running back or let a linebacker just scrape off and take care of the quarterback, because guess what? You let somebody try to scrape off and get to Justin Fields, he's down the sideline for six.
Yeah, and, Coach, I want to get your thought on this. When I'm watching, when I see Fields come in the game, it seems to me, and I know this is – it's hard enough for me to just – I have enough on my plate to try to pick who's going to cover the spread each and every week. So this is going above and beyond that. But it looks to me that when Fields comes in the game, they're running these plays, and he's got a couple of options, but he's not throwing it a lot. And the kids can spin it, mm-hmm. Okay? So it looks to me like when they get in these tougher games, the defense is going to be ready for the run, and he's going to go over the defense. Do you get any – does that make sense, or is that just a –
No, it makes perfect sense, because Justin Fields, he's an all-around guy. He can throw the football. I think that, again, right now, as a defensive coordinator, and again, we're talking offense here, but as a defensive coordinator, there's one thing that I always wanted to do in my game plans. I wanted a set of blitzes or stunts or coverages. I wanted a little special package that I put to the side. And I did not use those until the second half, if at all possible. In the first half, you really want to use as little as possible. And the reason being is because you don't want to give the other team time to go into the locker room, sit down, get comfortable, get a coat, get a Gatorade, what have you, get up on the board and go over this for 20 straight minutes and work out the kinks and work out the adjustments. You want to keep things in your pocket so all of a sudden when you throw it on them, the only time that they have to make adjustments is when they go over to the sideline in between possessions and they may only have a couple of minutes before they have to come back out on the field. And guess what? Then when they go back to the sideline, they have to kind of rehash what they went over because those guys don't remember that. And it's not because they're dumb. It's just because so much is being thrown at them, at a single time. So I think that's kind of what they're doing with Justin Fields. I think they're kind of baiting these teams down the road thinking, okay, yeah, he's going to run the ball. He's going to run the ball. And then all of a sudden, in that crucial time, like you said, he's going to light it up over the top.
Yeah, and again, I know that's it doesn't help me in my week-to-week preparation, but I just noticed that watching them and – yeah, they look sloppy at times, but Coach, remember, and when we did all our preview shows for 2018, the question always is Georgia going to be able to reload? We've seen Clemson, Ohio State, and Alabama, and a couple of other teams, but I thought that Georgia lost a lot of players on that defense, but again, they're only allowing 13 points a game, and maybe that sloppy play has a lot to do with these new players coming in.
And this is going to sound crazy after Nick Chubb is playing for the Cleveland Browns right now, but I think they're probably overall a better rushing team. They play a lot of folks at running back, and they had over 250 yards rushing combined on Saturday. Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Swift, they're kind of carrying the bulk of the load and everything. But they're getting a lot of other guys in the football game carrying the football. Again, that's something that I really like that Kirby's doing, and I think that's going to pay off for them down the road. All right, let's move on to Auburn and Southern Mississippi. Auburn 24, Southern Miss 13. This was a game that was marred by about a 2.5-hour lightning delay. And just like the weather, this game was ugly.
It was, and you told me when we discussed Auburn back in before week one, Auburn's offense doesn't click the first few games, and they're certainly not clicking right now. They're not running the ball, and here's the thing that a lot of fans, even Auburn fans that watch this team a lot, they don't understand that this offense is predicated off downhill running, and right now they don't have it.
They only rushed for a team total 96 yards on Saturday. Now, this is a team that has had a 1,000-yard rusher for each of the last nine seasons. But Jartavius Whitlow, he's the leading rusher on Auburn's football team right now, and he only has 326 yards. And that wasn't last week. That's on the season. And then after just four carries against Southern Miss, he had to leave the game with a shoulder injury, so who knows if he's going to even be back this week. But a telling statistic for me as a defensive coach is third down conversions against Southern Miss. Auburn was 5 of 16 on third down. This is an offensive line that has struggled this year, a lot of penalties. They're the longest rush of the year for Auburn is 26 yards. That's mind-boggling for me to think about that. Usually Auburn, has runs of 30, 40 yards each week, and the longest rush on the year is 26 yards. Stidham, he's completing 63% of his passes, but he's still just not sharp. He only has 5 touchdowns on the year and 2 interceptions.
Yeah, and right now that defensive front's carrying this team. Excuse me. The defensive line's carrying this team. They're one of the top three in all of college football. And look, Auburn, basically, they do what Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson do. They reload. But listen, when you lose a Cam Petway, more importantly, a Kerryon Johnson, who is doing very well in the NFL, when you lose those two guys, and I know Petway was hurt much of last year, but those are two great weapons. You can't just replace them. In addition, you've got injuries suspensions, or you don't. He doesn't have his weapons on the outside as well. The offensive line, last year they were really solid. This year they're struggling. They need to improve if they're going to if they're going to win the West again.
Well, let's just, and again, just competition, you know, the comparing schedules or what have you. Mississippi State has beaten Jackson State and Rice and lost to La Monroe 21-20. Southern Miss had a chance to drive down and tie the score and threw an interception. This game was actually a lot closer than the 24-13 score shows. I'm worried about Auburn going forward. I am truly worried about them when they get into some battles with Texas A&M, because I think when they get into battles with folks that are going to fight you up front, I don't mean that literally, but when they get into folks that are going to fight you up front, this offensive line is going to have trouble.
Yeah, and that's why I say they have to improve if they're going to repeat in the West. And, you know, if they win out, they have a very good chance. Of course, their loss was to LSU, and that was a tough loss. But when I look at the Auburn, they had 96 rushing yards against Southern Miss. They only had 91 against Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And that's a concern. Now, Arkansas's run defense is much better than I thought, because I watched them shut down Texas A&M for a great portion of that game. But, again, back to that defensive front. Southern Miss ran the ball for 45 yards. They only could gain 260 total yards in the game. So Auburn wins by 13, and it wasn't impressive, but all they wanted was a W, but they need to improve in many areas.
You mentioned Arkansas there. That's who Alabama has this coming Saturday. Of course, Alabama squeaked by the University of Louisiana Lafayette, or University of Louisiana, as they like to be called now. The Tide won a close one, 56-14. I mean, really, what's there to talk about this game? I mean, it's another dismantling of an undermanned team. But, Mike, from what I see, every team seems undermanned against Bama this year. This could be Saban's best team.
Yeah, well, it actually, that game was really close, because the total was 69, and Alabama opened as a 53-point favorite. They went off as a 49-point favorite, and the Cajuns scored a late touchdown to cover, and that late touchdown also put the game over 69. So it was close in that sense, but look, I do think that the fact that Saban was playing one of his proteges, it did factor in a little bit, but the bottom line is Alabama hasn't been tested yet, and it's not because they haven't played. They played who they played, okay? Mm-hmm. They played Louisville, stomped them 51-14 or what have you, but they're not going to get tested until they play LSU, Auburn, Mississippi State, still capable of putting up one good game. Remember, Alabama, I believe they only beat them by a touchdown last year.
That's true. Now, listen, and we're just going to call it what it is. Saban took his foot off the gas in the second half. The score was 49-0 at halftime. 49-0. I mean, it could have been 149-0 by the end of the game, had he wished that to be. But again, as you said, you know, he was coaching against one of his proteges. And, you know, and again, I think he showed him a little bit of sympathy there, 56-14, his sympathy. But the loudest cheer of the day in Bryant-Denny Stadium came when Jalen Hurts went into the game there in the first half with the Tide leading 28-0, because obviously that means that he's not going anywhere this year.
Yeah. Yeah, so and I need to word this correctly, but I would say – that Jalen Hurts is the most accomplished backup quarterback in college football history. Would that be an accurate statement in your mind?
I believe I could agree with that. I could get on board with that, yes.
Okay, well, you just look at, you know, he's led, he's starting quarterback. He was 26-2 and led them to two title games. Mm-hmm. And he looks to me like he's not just one-dimensional. And people say, oh, yeah, he's coming up in mop-up time. Well, no, he's not. He's coming in the sometimes the first, second, third quarters, and he's not going against twos and threes on the defense. So I think that Tua has raised Jalen Hurts' level of play as well.
Well, and Jalen, even last year, as badly as this sounds, because he's still not the elite passer that Tua is. I mean, Tagovailoa is an unbelievable talent. That's just
who is, Coach? That's the thing. That you look at this. Sorry to interrupt, but that's what people say. Oh yeah, but Jalen Hurts, he's nothing compared to Tua. Mm-hmm. Well, look at 130 FBS teams,
right,
and find me someone that is.
Yeah, and that was going to be my point. Is that he?
Oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. But you know, when you compare him to Tua, you know, so what? Compare everybody else to Tua and see where they stack up. And Jalen improved greatly last year, as badly as it sounds when you compare him to Tua. But Jalen was a better passer last year than he was his first year. So he has improved each year in the passing game. And, again, I think that these two young men, they have a lot of respect for each other, and I think they work to make each other better. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and what I always said about Jalen Hurts is I love his demeanor. He's a flatliner. He never gets too high, never gets too low. And even though it may have been in his best interest to move on, I didn't think it was. I thought his best interest was to stay at Alabama, play backup, and maybe get some snaps at H-back or something along those lines, because I think he could play at the next level in that position. But, hey, look, we saw it happen in Clemson. Players get hurt, and I'm going to say this. I'm a handicapper, so I don't care about the backlash, if any. When I watch these defenses play against Tua, I'm seeing little things like getting out of a pile, late hits, like that's their chance, especially these lower-level teams. That's their chance to say, yeah, I took – they gave him the Heisman in September, mm-hmm. and I took him out.
Yeah, this is true. You've got Jalen Hurts in a situation where, again, if things go as I think as all Alabama fans hope and as probably the coaching staff too, Jalen's going to come in a reserve role the entire year. However, if something happens, as we saw again at Clemson, it can happen just in one play and it be over with. Jalen is one twisted ankle, one ACL from being the starting quarterback at Alabama again. And again, you know, you're putting it in the hands of someone who's more than capable. If that happens, and God forbid it doesn't, not for Alabama fans or anything like that, but for the young man.
Yes. And let's go back to 2014. It's a little different, a couple of different dynamics here. But remember, Ohio State was down to their third-string quarterback, Cardale Jones, I believe. Mm-hmm. They go in and thrash Wisconsin, get into the playoff, and win the whole thing. So you need – if you're going to be one of the elite, which the Ohio States, the Alabamas, you have to have a more than capable backup. And, of course, Jalen Hurts has proven that he's more than capable.
We need to take another quick break right here on the Monday Morning Blitz, GameDaySportsRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Don't want no cloudy morning. Won't you hear what I say?